Good evening. Welcome to the Mystic here in the green room at Crosstown Concourse. Whether you are joining us here live or whether you are listening on our podcast or are watching the video of this on YouTube, we welcome you into this sacred space. My name is Lillian Lammers, and I am joined here by the very talented, arguably the best saxophone player on the planet, Kirk Whalum. Rabbi Micah Greenstein, the Reverend Joshua Narcisse, and the Reverend Dr. Scott Morris here at Church Health. And our musical talent tonight is Karen Brown on vocals. Woo! And T.O. Crivens joining us on guitar tonight. We welcome you. Let us begin. So what is the Mystic? It's not Muslim prayers on Friday, Jewish prayers on Saturday, or Christian prayers on Sunday. The Mystic is a catalyst. Through music, story, silence, and dialogue, we hope to strengthen our attachment to hopes and dreams. In the Mystic, diversity is a prerequisite for all creativity, which is why Crosstown Concourse is the perfect home. In the Mystic, the world is far better served by our different beliefs than it could ever be if limited by rigid uniformity. And even if this doesn't rock your gypsy soul, as the lyrics to the song say, the goal of the Mystic is not to feel better, but to get better at feeling. I ask that we each find the strength to open our hearts and treasure the differences that distinguish us. And may the music of compassion, kindness, spirit, and insight fill this hour.
We were born before the wind, so much younger than the sun. Ella Bonnebo was one into the Mystic. A heart now here. Sailors cry, feel the wind and taste the sky. Let your soul and spirit fly into the Mystic. And when that foghorn blows, we'll be coming home. When that foghorn whistle blows, I wanna hear it gypsy soul. Just like days of old, and magnificently we will flow into the mystic. And when that foghorn blows, I will be coming home. When that foghorn whistle blows, I wanna hear it. I don't wanna fear it. I wanna rock your gypsy soul. Just like days of old, and magnificently we will flow into the mystic. And magnificently we will flow into the mystic.
Amen. Welcome again to the Mystic here in Crosstown Arts, in the green room of Crosstown Arts. Now, interestingly enough, this morning offered me a almost object lesson in the thing I want to talk about tonight. If you, like me, got up this morning, got moving, and checked your phone, and then put it back down, and then opened it up again, you found out that Facebook and Instagram were down. Maybe you're like me, and you tried to open up Facebook, and it had forcibly logged you out, and you were trying to figure out what was happening. People started turning to other social media sites, like X, formerly known as Twitter, to confirm that other social media sites, Facebook and Instagram, were out. The outage even hit my phone as a news alert from the New York Times. And in those precious few moments this morning when part of the social media landscape was unavailable to us, we were separated from the very thing that we are purportedly told is supposed to bring us together, but which more often ends up separating us and turning us against one another, and even more, maybe insidiously, begins to turn us in on ourselves in the most unhelpful and unhealthy ways, in self-absorbed ways. That's what I want to talk about tonight and discuss this evening with you, my fellow mysticians. I want to talk about self-absorption. Now, the irony is not lost on me that a person with the last name Narciss is going to have a conversation about self-absorption, but we're going to try to work on it here. And along the way, hopefully we'll get to some self-awareness and make sense of our shared life together. And think through, what does it mean to truly know oneself? To understand the impact you have on the world and by participating in the community that we're all part of. I don't know where this conversation is going to end up, but that's what I like most about the Mystic. So let's go ahead and jump right on in. And I guess we'll start by testing out the premise. What do you guys think? Are people more self-absorbed these days?
People have always been self-absorbed, haven't they? I mean, is something new? I'm not sure we're missing anything. But I do think those phones are quite something. And I don't quite know if the word is self-absorbed or it just takes you another place. I mean, I spend an incredible amount of time myself on my phone, but it's like my work instrument, and it's my way of learning. You know, I've read all my life, and I'm reading to learn. And is that self-absorption? I don't know. Is it? I mean, it probably is. But I will say, the mentor in my life, y'all know William Sloan Coffin, who was the chaplain at Yale in the '60s and '70s. One of my favorite Coffin quotes is that there is no smaller package than a man all wrapped up in himself.
You know, I struggle with that because it seems as if folks being wrapped up in themselves has become profitable, right? That if we stick with, and I don't want to lambast and focus on social media all night, but if you look at that as a test case, right? Folks who are able to package, just sell that package of themselves, wrapping themselves up in their lives over and over again, can become profitable, can become a commodity, right? And because folks want to consume that.
I mean, people with you know, all these followings, and you get paid now for having 100,000 people following you. Just
you're an influencer.
You're an influencer, right? Yeah.
What do you think, Lillian?
Well, I don't want to give social media a totally bad rap because I have seen it do incredibly beautiful things. I've seen people use it to share information. I've seen people use it to organize around an important issue. And if people dare to be vulnerable on it, which is one of the issues, I have seen incredible rallying and support. If someone dares to say, hey, you know, I'm getting a divorce, the outpouring of support is beautiful. If someone dares to say, hey, y'all know I'm LGBTQ and today my family disowned me, I've seen beautiful things happen on social media. But let's remember that the people that invented social media kind of used our psychology against us to make it addictive and to create algorithms that suck us in very unhealthy ways. If you've ever watched the documentary, The Social Dilemma on Netflix, it's really interesting. It's one of the places that made me go further down the rabbit hole in understanding that. So the fact that it exists, but it exists so that anytime you do anything on it, someone can click that they like it. And then that becomes the defining characteristic of whether it was good, beautiful, meaningful, worthy, that whether or not it gets the like is I think what makes it really problematic and then makes it become this self-absorption thing, is because now your worth is determined, and so you're always striving to get those likes. What do you all think?
Micah is desperately trying to get out of sharing his thoughts.
I'm willing to bet Kirk has more followers than anybody else here. So,
probably. Fair enough.
Reverend Narcissism. I mean,
I tried to get ahead of it.
I did not hear your subject tonight as being about this.
Yeah.
I heard the subject of self-absorption as symptomatic of a disease that our society, particularly America, we need a clinical psychologist for the country, I think, beyond politics. There's this kind of like weird self-isolation. You know, this whole idea that we're not part of something larger, we're not part of a global community. Mm. You know, you want to win the lottery so you can be the one. Mm. Or we could talk about what the American dream means. Mm. Right? What's the American dream? There's this rabid individualism that I think your question connotes. And I am going to use my phone for this quote. It's not William Sloan Coffin, but it's Martin Luther King Jr. In the Green Room of the Green Room, mentioned the topic again. King said, "A person has not started living until he can rise above the narrow confines of his individualistic concerns to the broader concerns of all humanity."
Yeah.
So, I think it's a no-brainer. We are self-absorbed. The question is it leading to self-isolation?
Mm-hmm. And what is the risk of that, right? But
I have a friend, we call him T-Shady.
T-Shady?
Yeah, his name is Tom Shady.
He's sitting right over there. You know.
So one of the things that he always leads us to do is to see the two sides of the same thing, or kind of the underbelly, the soft underbelly of whatever it is that you're considering. And, you know, definitely the one aspect of, you know, maybe narcissism is wanting to draw attention to yourself, right? Now, you know, as a creative, my job is to draw attention to myself, right? And I work really hard, and these musicians work hard on their craft, but you are not going to get anybody to pay you any attention unless you draw attention to yourself, right? It just sort of goes with the territory. Nelson Mandela, also known as Madiba, once said to young South Africans, don't be afraid to be fabulous. He was giving them, and they call him, what is the name for the kids born after apartheid, the nickname is, come to me soon, but he was basically saying to them, yes, we've been oppressed. Yes, there's this reality, this existential mess that we have, but what I need you to do is to be fabulous, okay? And part of that is probably to draw attention to yourself. And one example of the sort of non sequitur aspect of this whole thing is that, you know, I find that business culture in particular, and I'm gonna say white dudes in particular, tend to stay away from anything that draws attention to themselves. In other words, you are not gonna wear a shirt like this on the average, right? Okay? It's just because, again, like, you know, if I've got the dough to buy a Bentley, that doesn't mean I'm gonna necessarily buy a Bentley. The idea is that I don't necessarily want to draw attention to myself, right? But then being African, you know, the African is like, I'm wearing every color at once. You know? And that's sort of the kind of freedom, you know, that African walks in. When I lived in Paris, man, the best dressed people there, period, were the African men, and there were a whole lot of them, right? Lots of African men. But my point is this, that it is, don't throw the baby out the bathwater, right? So it is important to realize that it is not all about you. But are you not called to inhabit whatever space that you're called to with a certain amount of, you know, reckless abandon in some ways? Like, you know what? No, I'm going to wake up today, smile in the mirror, and I'm going to not be, hold back. You know, I think there's an aspect of we're all called to call to draw attention to ourselves as we continue to pursue the light. Mm. We need to be mirrors.
Mm. Mic drop.
Yeah.
I want to turn it around a little bit more before we get some music going. Because how did we get to the extremes? Right, it's kind of what I hear you saying, Kirk, is that there's a place for a little bit of both, but we live in those extremes, and we can, in the extreme of self-absorption and even moving into self-isolation, as you were talking about, Mike, how do we get there? Right, what are the things that contributed to this growing sense, this growing comfort with being able to think that self-absorption is a healthy norm?
Well, I think Kirk qualified what he was saying, and as we walk into the light, you know, it's not reflecting you, it's reflecting something greater than you. That's what is drawing you forward. Micah, go.
I love that shirt.
You would never wear it, though.
Yes, I would. My wife would love you. I think, of course, we should be the best you, but are you a messenger or the message? That's the line for me, that you, my friend, are a messenger of the sacred. You see that you're a vessel, but it's when people see themselves, they're not self-aware that.
That's exactly right.
It's about what you're leading towards. We're all part of this crosstown concourse. It's greater than any one of us. If you think it's about you, I mean, be the best you. Bring out crosstown arts. Bring out the best. But remember that you are not the message. You're just a vessel.
Yeah.
For the line. I think I've been trying to, is that what you meant?
Yes, absolutely. You said it better.
No, you said it.
Well, I think along those lines of, you know, you used self-aware and that. So I feel like it's a thing throughout the history of all time that every generation likes to look at the generation behind it and shake a fist and say, you're so self-absorbed. But I do think that millennials and Gen Z are more self-aware at an earlier age than Gen X and boomers.
You don't think they're more self-absorbed?
I think they are more self-aware, and we see the way that that is exhibited in the world as self-absorbed. My example, and I'm not going to go to social media, they're not joining religious institutions, right? So everybody that works at one of those, like me, is like, ah, we're dying. What do we do? They're so self-absorbed. They don't want community anymore. Yeah. But I think one of the components is they know themselves, they know their diversity, they know their preferences. They are also the most highly anxious generation we've ever had, Gen Z.
What age is it?
Gen Z is people born, when are you?
Like after 98. 99.
After 98. Yeah. And then my kids, so who are six, are the beginning of Gen A. So it's a big window. It's the kids who are in high school and college right now. For example, I think that we are unwilling to look at ourselves as communities and organizations that already exist and realize how much we demand assimilation of what I think is the most self-aware at a young age generation ever, in part because of their access to information. But I, you know, I think about the church and we want them to come and join in on what we're already doing. We talked in the green room of the green room. I'm on the national board for my sorority, who's spending a lot of time and effort on how to become less white and less affluent and less cisgender. And because who's coming into college now is less white and less affluent and less cisgender than ever before. And so we're kind of having to do that introspective work to say, maybe they're not joining, not because they're so self-absorbed, but because we aren't giving them what they need. And I think there is a callback on us as organizations and communities to say, what is our role in belonging, creating a sense of belonging?
Right. And do we want folks to belong? I mean, I think for so long, we've invited folks not to belong, but to conform, mm-hmm. to fit in. We don't want you to take up space. We don't want you to draw attention to yourself. We want you to
assimilate.
I'm thinking of a David Brooks quote that I heard when he was here in September for the MIFA gathering. He said, to see the world as someone else sees it is to truly know someone with the goal of beholding them. Mm-hmm. Right? With the goal of beholding, to see someone and to see the world the way they see it, which requires a kind of both a self-awareness and a recognition of the other, and that their way of seeing is also valid and is a gift that you can be invited into. But that takes time to practice that, mm-hmm. in space that we don't often avail ourselves to. But thankfully, we're at the Mystic where we do give ourselves that space, particularly through music.
Now, I'm sure most of you know this song. So if you could snap with me, we're gonna snap it up, yeah. You walked in to the party like you were walking onto a yacht. Your hat strategically dipped below one eye. Your scarf, it was apricot. You had one eye in the mirror as yourself go out, and all the girls dream that they be your partner, they be your partner, and you're so vain. You probably think this song is about you. You're so vain. I bet you think this song is about you. Don't you, don't you? You had me several years ago when I was still quite naive. Well, you said that we made a pretty pair and that you would never leave. But you gave away the thing you loved, and one of them was me. I had some dreams, they were clouds in my coffee, clouds in my coffee, and you're so vain. You probably think this song is about you. You're so vain. I bet you think this song is about you. Don't you, don't you, don't you? Clouds in my coffee, and you're so vain. You can help me sing it. You're so vain. I bet you think this song is about you. Don't you, don't you? So vain.
Tell you, I've never felt so good singing about myself.
Mr. Narcisse, there you go. All right, I want to say a word about our guitar player. So T. O'Neill Crivens Jr., right? So his father, when I first met him 35 years ago, introduced himself to me as T. O'Neill Crivens Sr. Now, he wasn't that old, so I couldn't quite figure that out. Turns out that this is his son, but his father was a founding board member of Church Health, and self-proclaimed his job being on our board was to, quote unquote, make the Church Health Center churchy. And this is his son, who is with Beale Street Caravan. So if you don't know Beale Street Caravan, y'all, you got your head under the something, but it is a big deal.
And by the way, T.O., my first time getting to play with you, I thought, but he reminds me that we played together years ago. So very, very, very awesome. I wanted to say that I remembered what that name was, a nickname for the young South Africans, born after apartheid. They're called Born Frees. The Born Frees. Is that a cool nickname? But and also quickly, just to comment on Lillian, you talked about your seven-year-old, the A generation, or Generation A. Mm-hmm. So my daughter is 38. We have four kids. But she has two girls, six and seven. And I have, you know, we have just settled, talked to Scott. Scott is my counselor on this. Talked a lot about, man, I just guess this whole thing of like leading them to Christ and bringing them to God and all that, you know, that we grew up doing, Ruby and I. We just, well, okay, so that's not going to happen. 38 to 40, and they're all like, yeah, man, not so much, Dad. Today, I get a picture because we happen to take our granddaughters to Mass with us the other day. They asked her to buy them Bibles. I'm just saying, you know, Generation A, what the hell with them?
Yeah.
This actually provides quite a good segue as we were getting into it in our first half between the Born Frees and your granddaughters asking for Bibles because there's something within them that says, this is a thing I want. Mm-hmm. I want to talk about self-awareness, right? And what role that plays within this larger conversation of self-absorption. And let's just start off with where each of us are. What does self-awareness mean to you? And where do you find yourself on your own journey of deepening self-awareness? And Scott, I'm looking at you.
Oh, my Lord. Well, as some of you know, tonight is my last day in the 60s.
Hear, hear.
So my father, who's 91, says he never thinks about how old he is until he thinks about how old I am. And I will be 70 tomorrow. You know, truthfully, y'all, I haven't thought about it. You know, I in terms of that self-awareness, I think I'm aware of myself in terms of my work and my marriage and our dog and the things that matter to me, the work of Church Health. But I don't find myself thinking about me in the process. So I'm a little, what you were talking, Kirk, I mean, that I am that white guy who doesn't want to put the spotlight on me. Well. I do like purple. That's the Church Health color.
Color purple is a great color. What about you, Lillian?
So it's interesting. I don't think self-awareness and self-absorption exist in harmony together. I think that self-awareness, there are limits to how self-aware we can become in isolation. And my favorite example of this, I don't know, did any of y'all do CPE?
Oh, I avoided it like the plague.
Yeah, that's what I figured the answer would be.
You'll have to explain what that is.
A lot of like shaking heads and hands like no. So CPE, most Protestant mainline traditions require folks in the ordination track to get a unit of CPE. And if you've ever met somebody who works professionally as a chapel, they probably have four or more units of CPE. It's called Clinical Pastoral Education. It is a training program offered by the Association for Clinical Pastoral Education, and it's a requirement to go into many careers in ministry. And essentially, it's usually done at a hospital. Sometimes it's done at like a cool place like a community center or a rehab facility, but mostly done in a hospital. And there's a component, so you're doing the work of being a chaplain, but then you come back into this group together for about 8 hours a week. You're doing group work together. And the special time in group work, usually at the end of a group day, they have this thing called IPR, and it stands for interpersonal relations. And literally what they do is they make you get in a circle and sit and stare at each other until somebody starts talking.
They're Quakers.
It is very much a Quaker thing. And eventually people start talking. Somebody says, so I have an interesting story about today. They do this because they know that it is human nature that eventually conflict will arise. And sometimes it takes a couple sessions of this. Sometimes it's off to the races right away that somebody offends somebody within the first minute. But it's a way of, I noticed this about you when you said that. And then there's sort of this reflective back and forth. And one of the goals of it is for you to become more aware of how people experience you, how the things that you say are heard and understood by others, whether it's your intention or not. And it is the most gut-wrenchingly painful, awkward thing that I've ever done, and one of the most useful, and one of the best tools I've ever had for understanding how I operate in the world, how I show up, and for me to be able to then reflect back and temper that in ways that I need to.
Since we're friends, I want to disagree a little, if that's okay. What's the opposite of someone who's self-absorbed? They're selfless. I think hyper self-awareness can lead to self-absorption. And I see that just objectively, not with Jen A, because my grandchild's perfect. But as a mentor, not so much to my colleagues in Memphis, but to generations of younger colleagues who
begin with a work-life balance. Maybe they have it right. And I'm not going to keep that church going because I'm not willing to really do that. I am aware that I don't want to work that hard or devote myself to that. Whereas a Mother Teresa probably thought she wasn't doing enough. I just think we need some clinical analysis from 30,000 feet on this. It may very well be these churches need to be more accessible. So do the sororities and fraternities. But it may be that one of the reasons why the institutions of yesteryear, the churches, besides maybe not being as relevant and welcoming and creating a sense of belonging, is too many of us, I don't mean just ministers, would rather find themselves in search of something than be selfless and sacrificial about what it is that. So I think there is a dialectic between self-awareness and self-absorption, and one can lead to the other. I think self-awareness is wonderful. But I think self-absorption is more symptomatic of our culture and of America relative to the global community. So I just wanted to push back a little before we feel so good about ourselves.
Keep on pushing.
And I would just like to say your grandchild is the most self-absorbed because aren't they still a baby? There is no more self-absorbed creature than a baby.
Absolutely. Yeah, so, you know, the idea of, you know, being stuck on yourself, you know, that pandemic, that thing broke me down so bad, right? And I told these guys a story about that. We ended up some kind of way at the beginning of the pandemic. You know, life just happens, right? You don't get to like orchestrate anything. With three adult kids, including a spouse, three kids under four, and two dogs living with us for 8 months in the pandemic, but we couldn't get away from each other. And so one of the aspects, I won't go into that, but one of the aspects of, you know, I just figured, got it right where I want. And I went right in on just making converts out of all of them. I was just going to preach the gospel to all of them, yeah.
Turned you into a Catholic, didn't it?
You know, my kids, man, they let me know in no uncertain terms that I was not seeing myself rightly, as the Bible says, that I wasn't seeing myself rightly, right? So you're going to proselytize somebody to your way, but you haven't really sorted it out yet, you know? And I guess there's not a point in, under the sun where we will have sorted it out, and we, you know, not at all, but at that point, I just felt like it all just felt came crashing down. And so I had to get my head around the fact that I needed to listen better. One of the things that fast forward, you know, my son plays, if you look at The Voice this season, you'll see my son playing The Voice. He just came back from Australia with Katy Perry. He plays with a lot of famous people, but he has gotten me into transcendental meditation.
Nice.
And
what's your mantra?
I was so upset. I did TM too, and I'm on a plane. And the person next to me is doing TM. And he said, "What's your mantra?" I said, "I can't tell you." And he told me his, and it was mine.
Did you beat him up and say you can't have it? You just ruined it.
Yeah, I mean, just to say that, you know, my life right now is just so beautiful. And part of it is because I got broken down so bad, order, disorder, reorder, right? And yeah, my son, I'm so grateful for that. And I am pretty much most like every other day when I do get to meditate, I am a tree. And so I'm not, I'm just participating like all the other trees and just sapping up the roots of, you know, just all the goodness and trying to just be there, you know, be out of God's way, basically.
One, I love you guys because I haven't laughed this much. This has been wonderful. You know, I think self-awareness, selflessness, yes. And I want to get to selflessness in a second, but I want to be self-aware for a moment. As we were getting started, I turned my shoulder and saw a friend sitting in the back and was like, maybe I should talk about how god-awful I am at self-awareness and how much the work that I've been engaged in has helped me. I'm talking about you, Jane, a friend of ours that works at Church Health that introduced me to so many mindfulness techniques, including a body scan. Dr. Morse, you talk about Cartesian dualism all the time. I think, therefore, I am. And that is where I like to live. My default, I just like to be in my head the whole time. If I can ignore the fact that I have a body, I am a happy person.
That's why I like you so much.
Right. I don't want to deal with the physical. And that is where, so when I'm unhealthy, when I'm unwell, I just run to thinking it all through. And Jane's introducing me to body scans. And then, again, I've mentioned before how wonderful therapy is. I recommend it for everyone. Therapist forcing me through some practices of, so what were the emotions that you had, right? What sensations were you feeling? What were the thoughts that were connected to that and forcing me to be where I was, to not try to escape? And I think for me, self-absorption is a kind of escapism, right? That self-awareness can be so painful because we don't know what to do with it, because it pulls us out of self-isolation, because it forces us into a selflessness that culturally we're told is too costly, right? That to be selfless costs us too much. But what is the benefit? Maybe to ask the obvious question, what's the benefit of selflessness?
To step back at every turn and listen to what that person is telling me. And in the process of doing it, I just feel like I learn more about myself. I mean, that's how it works for me, I think. I don't know if that would be selflessness, but I think getting myself out of the picture allows me to fully focus on the patient for me. But in doing that, then I allow myself to better understand what I can learn from them.
Mm. Well, say you, Michael.
I can't wait for the next song.
It's a cop out.
I was just going to say, what's the point of selflessness?
Yeah.
It's everything. It's because it's all about the other. I mean, that's the...
Yes.
Irony about this conversation. If it's not about you, it's about the other.
Mm-hmm.
And selflessness is the ultimate example of that. That a selfless person may not be self-aware and certainly not self-absorbed, but they're impacting the world.
Yeah. I think my simple answer to that is because God, through Jesus, told me to. You know, at a lot of weddings, people like to read 1 Corinthians 13, yes. Love is patient, love is kind. What drives me a little bit crazy, and it's become my little sermonette at weddings, is this is not that kind of love. Mm-hmm. This is not eros. This is agape. This is the Latin caritas. This is charity. This is self-sacrificial love of sibling kind of love. But we like to think of it as romantic love, so we read it at weddings. But I am so drawn to that notion of love of neighbor, love of sibling, love as fellow creation of God. And you've got me all in the headspace of thinking about America and how we don't do that. And so now I'm going to have to go home and grumble about that for a while because that's real. That is essentially the story of every religious tradition, is it not?
It is.
Get outside of yourself. Mm-hmm. Get outside of yourself.
Well, let's hear some music.
The children are our future. Teach them well and let them lead the way. Show them all the beauty they possess inside. Give them a sense of pride to make it easier. Let the children's laughter remind us how we used to be. Everybody's searching for a hero. People need someone to look up to. I never found anyone who fulfilled that need. A lonely place to be. And so I learned to depend on me. I decided long ago never to walk in anyone's shadow. If I fail, if I succeed, at least I live. Because the greatest love of all is happening to me.
Karen, I'm about to throw something at you in love.
Wow, that was something, Karen. I haven't ever heard that song like that. So.
I have a personal testimony on that. I was sharing a little bit
Whitney,
Karen, on that, right? So, you know, it's the paradox of, you know, I toured with this lady and she loved, hated singing that song.
Mm.
Right? So Whitney, I was told Karen that, you know, it's a paradox in your life. Like, you know, you want this one big thing, right? This big song. She finally gets it and she realizes, I don't like it. You know, and not so much, it was just, it had to do with the fact it was really hard to sing.
Yeah.
Not for Karen. But,
sounds like Whitney was very self-aware.
but the point, though, is that I did not like the song either at the time because, again, at the time I was heavy in, you know, to my evangelical phase, and I thought, no, that's not the greatest love of all.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah.
This loving God, you know. And then just, you just got to live a little bit, and here I am realizing that, you know what, actually, God is like, yes, of course, love me, and that's the great commandments, right? Love God and then love your neighbor. And but the thing is that God is not, I have a friend, maybe relative, but a friend who has this thing about God being a worship junkie. Like worship is God's drug, you know? And yeah, I'm like, I'm not down with that, you know? Like God is fine, but God does need our love, but it's not like that, right?
Yeah.
But the idea that loving me has been the kind of hardest thing, right?
Mm.
But, and if I do that correctly, I am loving God and I am loving others.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
So it's like the self-absorbed good part of that.
Yeah.
There you go.
As Thurman might put it, paraphrasing, humanity's relation to humanity and humanity's relationship to God are one relation.
Mm.
It cannot be separated.
Beautiful.
Scott.
Well, I think this conversation has been rich and deep, and what we realize is that life is hard, and you know, we think we have it in the moment, and then we can lose it, and that's true for all of us. And I know those of you who never knew John Kilzer may think that Kirk and Mike and I talk about him too much, and that's maybe true, but it shows you how important he was in our lives. And it was 5 years ago on the 12th of this month when John did take his life. And I wish he had been able to be a part of a conversation like this. He might not have ever done it.
We hope that you will see us again for the Mystic in April, Tuesday, April 2nd. We'll join us right back and gather in this room for this sacred space and special conversation. Karen and Tio, why don't y'all take us out?
If we can learn what it means to really love ourselves, then we can learn to love our neighbors as we love ourselves. And we can live in harmony, see ourselves as a family. This is my prayer for humanity. That we respect our women and protect our girls, that they feel safe in every corner of the world, that we can live in harmony, see ourselves as a family. This is my prayer for humanity. That every man, woman, boy, and girl will heed these words all across the world. That every man, woman, boy, and girl will heed these words all across the world. That every man, woman, boy, and girl will hear these words all across the world. This is my prayer. This is my prayer for you.